All right, you can call it to order now.
Call to order the Northgate Urban Renewal Advisory Board meeting for November 5th, 2020. You want to do a roll call?
Jared Martin.
Here.
Mike White is excused. Jason Cox.
Here.
Mike Alley is excused. Barb Rush.
Here.
Nate Levine.
Here.
Pedro Moreo is absent. Mark Adams.
Here.
Dania Ballard is absent. Brittany Davidson.
Here.
And Frank Pack is absent.
Morning, everyone. Can I get an approval of the agenda?
I would move approval of the agenda as presented.
Do I have a second?
Second by Nate.
And can we get an approval of the minutes from August 6th meeting?
I would move approval by Mark.
This is Brittany, I'll second.
Okay, so approved. Move on to 4A. First thing this morning, we're going to talk about the Zamora site and updates from Lindsay Dent from Arches is here to kind of give us an idea of where they're at on the temporary homeless shelter for the winter. So Lindsay, you want to go ahead?
Good morning. Hi, everybody. Good morning. Thanks for having me this morning. I'm going to, if it's okay, I'm going to share my screen, and then I just have a quick brief presentation, and then I'm happy to answer questions if you guys happen to have questions. So let's see if this works here. Okay. Okay. So hopefully you see sort of a sheltering services and visions slideshow here. I'm not a Zoom expert, so hopefully that's what everybody can see. Okay, great.
All right.
Yeah, awesome. So what we're looking at here is the whole scope of sheltering services and what that means for chronically homeless people in our community. And that really ranges from people in the camps or people that are living unsheltered and that are not enrolled in any services, all the way to the ultimate goal is to provide permanent supportive housing. What we do as part of our outreach strategy is we go into camps to make sure that everybody is receiving coordinated entry, which means they receive a comprehensive assessment to determine if they may be eligible for particular housing programs or they're put on a waiting list for future opportunities. And what we're talking about, what you guys are interested in, is the Duration Warming Center over at 2640 Portland Road, which was formerly the Zamora site. So we'll kind of dig more into that piece of the whole spectrum. So what this is under the umbrella of the Salem Warming Network, which is a network comprised of community partners, some faith-based organizations, and a network of people that are assisting to provide emergency shelter services for people that need to get away from the elements is a life-saving measure during times when temperatures are freezing or there's severe weather activation, like flooding, for example. So we have at least three churches throughout Salem that when the weather drops, the temperatures drop, then those sites are activated and people have the opportunity to go there. What we started last year was the Duration Warming Centers. And so I'm gonna, again, dig more into that, but this year we have two different sites for Duration Warming in Salem. One of those sites is going to be serving women and women with children, and one of those sites is the Zamora site is going to be serving elderly adults with chronic health conditions. So this began in part under the House Bill 4212 in the emergency declaration. So Community Action Agency requested through the city based on that emergency declaration that particular site was available for emergency sheltering needs. This site is going to be staffed. It's going to be managed by paid and trained staff, coordinated and oversight by me, as well as my coordination team, and also 24/7 security. So low barrier, what that means is we offer emergency sheltering services under the low barrier model, which means we simply were trying to remove any barriers that somebody might have in order to access services. So that might mean, you know, they have to take a drug screening, for example, or we don't separate families if at all possible. So we do try to remove all barriers because, again, this is a life-saving measure. We do require a behavioral-based model, which means if you are adhering to the expectations that we have, then you are welcome to continue services. And then, of course, this year, there's been a lot of planning and engagement around adaptations due to COVID. So what we have here is the first picture on the left is the Northgate neighborhood. And in the last Wednesday of January, every year, we have what's called the PIC count, or the point in time homeless count. And in January of 2019, we counted approximately 30 homeless unsheltered individuals living in that neighborhood. I know that I don't have the data yet or right in front of me, but I imagine that probably most people would agree that we've got, the visibility has increased throughout Salem and in that neighborhood as well. So I'm interested to find out what that number looks like this coming January. The picture on the right is straightforward. It's a map of sheltering sites that we have throughout Salem. So as I mentioned, the activation sites that open only on nights that are freezing or there's severe weather, those are in green there. And then the duration shelter is, one is on State Street and one is on Portland and Silverton Road. All right, so this is how the entry process works. So in order to, like I had mentioned in the past, somebody's unsheltered or they come to the Arches Project wanting to receive housing services, they receive a comprehensive assessment to determine placement and eligibility. So what happens is we are going to look at people that have requested housing services within the last 6 months, and we're going to make sure that they're chronically homeless, which means that they've been on the streets or living somewhere that's not meant for habitation for a good year or more. And then we're going to pull, based on our database, our homeless management information system, we are going to pull adults that are 65 or older and that have identified as having chronic health conditions. So that could mean cancer, diabetes, heart conditions, etc. And once we do those pulls and make those contacts, we want to make sure that they agree to participate in the program. And what that means is they really have to agree to the expectations. It's usually fairly straightforward, not harming yourselves or others, no theft, and no using drugs or alcohol on site. So those are the basis of the rules. Let's see here. And so they would also, I'm not sure if this, let's see, there we go. They would also agree to stay for up to 29 consecutive days. So what we need to do based on landlord tenant laws and other things is we really need to make sure that they're staying up to 29 days. And at that point, we will take the re-enrollment piece on a case-by-case basis. So we're going to look at things like, are they being an active program participant? Are they, are there no complaints in the community about this particular client or individual? So we're going to staff those situations and determine if they're eligible to stay another 29 days, or we move on our coordinated entry list. All right, so another big thing this year is COVID-19. In addition to the basic, social distance, wearing your face coverings, and following CDC and OHA guidance, we are definitely spacing out the mats and the cots that we have available for people, as well as creating physical dividers so that people may, it's been approved that people can remove their masks if they're on their mat to sleep. And we have developed a no-touch or a hands-free approach so that staff and volunteers do not have to physically touch items that, like blankets, for example, or any other items that were used by a client. One of the biggest new pieces is every single staff person, every single client or volunteer has to receive a COVID screening at least once per day. So upon entry every single night, they will have a temperature screening as well as have to answer a questionnaire. If at that point it's determined that they have a fever and COVID symptoms, then we immediately isolate them. We have an isolation room there as well as some outside spaces, and we have agreements for transportation to come and pick them up and take them to a COVID isolation hotel. So we also have a hotel program sort of in conjunction with this, and the goal really is to make sure people receive testing, are wrapped around with Marion County and Alluvium Health Services so that we support their return to health and that we're reducing any possible spread within the community. So that's really essentially it. I imagine people have questions and I'm happy to have a dialogue. We're always looking for volunteers and applicants, and my contact information is there also if anybody happens to have follow-up questions.
Yeah, this is Mark. I've got a question. A lot of these folks come with a tremendous amount of personal belongings. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with a couple shopping carts full of, I'll be polite, personal belongings? Because you're not going to have room for those inside the facility, I assume.
Yes, yeah. So we have a system where we are actually looking at getting a portable storage or a pod out there, and people need to check in their belongings as well as check it out. So that really helps with any theft concerns as well as, you know, any eyesores and safety. So we do have a process where people have to check in their belongings. Only staff can access the portable storage, and then they can check back out their belongings in the day.
Great.
I got a question. So when you say you're going to separate them to the hotels when they show symptoms, so then are they going to get a test?
Yeah, so the expectation for hotel would be that they receive a test and the testing's free. And if the test is negative, they would have to go on county guidance for clearance to be able to exit that program. So if the test is negative, usually takes 2 to 3 days, and they don't have symptoms for over 72 hours, then they can return to the shelter. Or if the test is positive, then they need to follow that pathway in order to return to health.
Are you set up for like an influx of like, oh my gosh, there's, you know, 20 people at the shelter all of a sudden that are showing symptoms?
So truth be told, this is an unprecedented time, and I think we all know this. I don't have to preach to the choir or anything. I can tell you we have the budget and we are prepared that that's a very likely a possibility. We simply just don't know what's going to happen, especially with cold and flu season this winter.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions?
Yeah, Mark again. Are you going to be providing or giving access to outside groups to provide meals and different situations like that on site, or do people leave the site to go find, you know, lunch or dinner or something like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So a couple of things. We will be expecting people to not be at the site during the day. So that's the expectation right now, and we will have security. We have shuttling opportunities to our day center so that they can receive showers, laundry, navigation services, as well as food and coffee or whatever they need throughout the day. And there's very little gap time where there won't be a service available to them. We have like kitchenette style food or, you know, cup of noodles type of things for people during the night, because sometimes people are just hungry and that can make all the difference just to have some tea and a cup of noodles. So we do have snack items there throughout the night.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
I just had one question. I might have missed it, but how many spots do you have available for people at each site?
Yeah, that's a great question. So at this particular site, we have, because of COVID guidelines, we have a maximum of 25 people that can be served in the congregate shelter. We're doing a phased approach, which means we're going to make sure we are going in with a lot of a thought forethought and intention around making sure that we're going to manage the project well. So we're going to begin with the indoor congregate sheltering. And if and when, you know, we evaluate that it's going well and we have the resources and staffing necessary, then we're looking at the next phase of bringing on possibly car camping and things like that. So regarding the congregate indoor sheltering, it would be up to 25.
Well, thank you very much, Lindsay. Thank you for the update. Do you guys have an idea, maybe I missed it, of like when this is actually going to start?
Yeah. So our target date is December 1st. We are slated for December. It's likely that it might be pushed back a couple of weeks, but definitely before Christmas and through March 31st.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me. So if you do have any questions, you are welcome to email follow-ups on that last slide there.
Lindsay? Just so you can do the plug, there's a community meeting tonight this as well, correct?
Yes, thank you. Yes, tonight at 6 p.m. I'm not quite sure, Sarah, how to get that Zoom link. I can send it.
If somebody's interested. I know that I just got sent it in case there's interest, but I believe it's set up for anyone in the neighborhood or anyone that might be interested. I'm assuming it'll be a similar presentation to what you actually did this morning.
Yes, absolutely. The city is hosting, and I'll just present and answer questions, and we'll have a dialogue about it.
Yeah. So if anyone is interested, just let me know, and I'd be happy to forward you that link for this evening. Okay, got it.
Okay. Yeah, I'll take one.
Okay, all right, guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Lindsay.
Take care.
Okay, next one. We have Eunice here to update us on the Salem plan. Eunice, are you here?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. I can, at least. Hi, are you ready to give us an update on where you guys are at for our portion of the city of Salem?
I am. Thank you so much for having me. I'm Eunice Kim. I'm the Long Range Planning Manager for the City of Salem, managing the Our Salem project. I think I came before, but we ran out of time. So I was going to just give a brief overview of what the project is before I get into the update to make sure we're kind of on the same page, if that's okay. Okay, I'm going to share my screen if I can. So just as an overview, can you all see the screen?
Yep.
Great. So the Our Salem project really is a project to update what's known as our comprehensive plan. It's the long-range goals, policies, and map that really guide how we grow and develop in the future. So it's pretty broad ranging. It impacts everything from our housing to our economic development, our transportation system, our environment, et cetera. Everything kind of related to growth and development. This is kind of the big framework through which that all occurs. So as you all know and you've seen, you know, Salem has been growing and developing a lot in recent years, and it's projected to continue growing. And so this is really our opportunity to say, how should that growth occur? What should our priorities be? Where should the growth occur? So this is just a map that shows the city limits, which is the black dotted line, and then the gray portion is our portion of the urban growth boundary. So I don't know if you've heard the 60,000 more people by 2035 kind of thrown around in the community. They're referring to this gray area. So no one expects the city of Salem to see that 60,000, but that larger area that includes the unincorporated areas of Marion Port County. So we are seeing growth. This is kind of our opportunity to plan for it. So we've been working on this visioning portion of the Our Salem project since late last summer. We've been out and about kind of talking to people about what their priorities again for growth are, where they want to see different types of development. And we've reached a really major milestone in the project where we have a draft vision. And so that's what I'm going to kind of concentrate on tonight. But I just want to let you all know we've been outreach in all different ways, talking to all different people. So this really is kind of a culmination of all of that input. We don't think we've got it 100% right. So it is a draft vision at this point, what I'm going to talk about tonight. And so right now we're hoping to get more input to see how do we need to make revisions to that vision. So we have a draft vision statement that really captures some of the shared priorities we've heard throughout the community. So you'll see references to affordable housing, local businesses, the environment, and safe transportation. And we're trying to see is this kind of what the draft vision is from the community? Are there things we want to see changed or added? And we've already received input on this, so it probably will be changing. So the draft goals in the vision are very high level. They cover, again, a pretty broad range of topics, but they don't dive deep into details. So the vision, again, is very high level. Eventually, we will get to detailed policies. And the draft vision document itself does show some of those draft policies. But right now, we're trying to make sure, did we get these high-level goals correct before we move into the details? And so I'm just going to give a couple examples of those goals, and then you can find it all on our project website, which I will share in a second. So for example, one of the draft goals we have is around community engagement. We've heard that it's important in the community that we are inclusive, we're transparent, and we really are giving opportunities for meaningful engagement. So not just we'll listen to you, but we're not necessarily going to do anything with it. We're really trying to make sure that what we hear crafts the vision going forward. And this draft goal is it trying to make sure that we do this in all of our planning projects, in our investment decisions, in our policy decisions. Another draft goal is around this idea of complete neighborhoods. One of the things we've heard throughout the community is that people want to be able to live where they have access to amenities, jobs, shops, services, parks, etc. So this idea of a complete neighborhood is a newer idea that we don't have in our current comprehensive. We have a lot of economic development goals. They're pretty broad, just ensuring that we still have a very strong local economy. And we're making sure that people have access to those jobs and training necessary. And the city is also kicking off an economic development strategy, which is more short-term focused, the next maybe 5 or so years. And it's really focused on kind of the recovery from the pandemic and the more immediate needs of businesses, but we're going to be working together, and we are working together with urban development to make sure whatever they hear in that, we can roll into the comp plan, whatever we hear in this project, we can, you know, so we're talking and there's going to be a lot of collaboration going on. A new draft goal was related to greenhouse gas emissions reductions. It's become a priority, or it's at least voiced as a priority in the community over the last few years. We have done a GHG inventory, and now we're working on a climate action plan. So we're coordinating also with that project to make sure that we're collaborating. And this is just an example of our transportation goals. There's a lot of draft goals in the vision right now related to transportation. It is a priority in the community. And so this is one of the goals around complete streets, just being very explicit that our transportation system is really meant to serve people who drive, walk, take the bus, ride their bike, and any new forms of transportation that may be coming in the future. So we also have a map. So the draft vision, again, is goals and then a high-level map. And don't worry if you can't see all this. I'll explain. There are kind of four big ideas that go into this map. One is that we have heard that people want to see different types of housing and multifamily housing distributed across the community. They don't want it concentrated just in one section of the community, and so you'll see that we've tried to do that in the map. We've heard that people want to see more mixed-use development or more opportunities to do mixed-use development. So you'll see that we have proposed mixed-use along some of our major corridors, like Lancaster Commercial, and you'll see in Portland Road as well. Neighborhood hubs is an idea that came out of this project so far, where we've heard again that people want to be able to kind of walk to meet some of their daily needs within their neighborhood. So a neighborhood hub is really a small scale services, shops, baker sort of service within a neighborhood. And then for employment, we've largely left the industrial areas where they are. There's not a lot of room to have new huge industrial areas, but where there's areas for growth along those industrial areas, you'll see that in the map. And then we've heard particularly around the pandemic and just the uncertainty around the economy that people want to be able to do commercial businesses throughout the community and in different ways. So we're trying to see, are there ways to, for example, promote live workspaces, which we don't have a lot of here in the community. So we have some new ideas related to employment. So these are just all the kind of changes on the map so far. You'll see the pink again is mixed use, and I'll show an interactive map that we have on our project website, which is just an easier way to see all of these changes. Can you see this? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can get to this from our project website, which is citysalem.net/rsalem, and it's under View Proposed Changes, Interactive Map. There's the actual draft vision document in English and in Spanish, and then here's the map. So we created this map so you can see, for example, what if there's any change to a specific property that we're proposing or an area. So I just came to Portland Road, you might have some interest in it, and you'll see that the south portion or the east portion of Portland Road Northeast, we're proposing to change to mixed use. That doesn't mean you have to do, or a property owner has to do retail with housing or office, but it opens up the opportunity to do housing or retail or office or all of it together in one area. So to use this map, you just click on a property and you can see that the existing designation is commercial. So it's really right now very much a commercial corridor, but the proposal is mixed use. And we've also created kind of additional information. What do we mean by mixed use? You can click on this little link and see that we try to explain just what I was saying. You don't have to do a mixed use project, but you have the flexibility if you want to do different types of uses. So I'm happy to talk more about the proposal generally in this area, but I just wanted to say that we also have a survey. So we're out and about through the end of this month, roughly, getting input. Did we get the vision right? Are there goals that we're missing? Are there areas on the map where you want to see different types of changes? And then we'll make revisions and hopefully bring that vision back to the council early next year, maybe February, to get their acceptance. We're not asking for adoption, but we do want to make sure we're on the right course before we dive into all the details of the zoning map, the zoning code, the policies. And then ultimately we'll bring it all together as a package to the council for adoption probably by the end of next year. So if you want to do the survey, you can always just call me, Naomi, that's fine too. Do you have questions about the general project or do you want to talk about the map? We can stop sharing for now.
I have a question about
Yeah.
I have a question about the whole thing. So is this something when it comes to the plan, do the people vote on it in the end, or is it just a city council to adopt it?
It's city council.
Okay.
Ines, I have a question.
Yeah, sure.
This is Barb Hagresh, and I've emailed you before.
Yes.
About the fact that I was highly disappointed when this plan came out that there was no mention of a third bridge across the Willamette as right. part of the transportation plan.
Right.
This is my next question.
I'm going to plug in real quick. I'm losing power. Yes. Did you want me to explain why that is again?
Maybe to the group. I think they
yes, please.
That question.
Yes, please.
So the draft vision and the comprehensive plan is very, again, high level. So you won't see specific projects, any projects called out in the goals. We have heard, obviously, that there are concerns around congestion crossing the bridge, and so we have drafted a policy in the draft vision you'll see in the appendix related to that. The third bridge project itself, obviously, the council has taken a vote on it, but it remains a project in our transportation system plan. That is a component of the comprehensive plan, and that component, the TSP, will be updated after the RSalem project is finished. So we're working on, again, high-level goals and map, and then we'll start getting into details of the transportation policies, the transportation system plan, the parks master plan, et cetera, to be updated in line with the comprehensive plan. So currently, the bridge project is in the TSP. Whether or not it stays in the plan or is removed or is changed or tweaked will be a council decision, but that will happen as part of the transportation system plan update, which again is going to be after the RSalem plan. So you won't see goals around building any infrastructure specific projects in the comp plan.
Wouldn't that kind of tie into the transportation plan though?
Right, and so right now it is in the transportation system plan currently.
Okay.
So we're not updating that right now. We're updating the higher level plan, comprehensive policies, goals, and the map. So that's a detailed project with a lot of language already in the transportation system plan. It remains there despite the vote of the council. It's really a council decision again if it stays, changes, remains, gets pulled out, et cetera. And that will happen after the RSalem project.
But okay, the comprehensive plan could have limitations in it which would affect the third bridge plan, correct?
Could have limitations? What do you mean?
You could say that we're going to reduce automobile gas emissions. You could say certain things. You could put limitations in your overall plan that could affect building the third bridge. you could have something that says we don't want to affect waterways or we don't want to do anything. I guess my concern is that the overall plan does not limit additional or future development of something like a third bridge.
Okay, I appreciate that comment. The council has taken a vote to set a climate goal for carbon neutral by 2050, and that will impact all of our work going forward, including, you know, this project, I'm sure updates to the TSB, obviously the climate action plan. But there's nothing intentional right now trying to preclude it in our draft vision. If you see something, please do let me know and we can talk through that. Again, it's very high level goals. There is going to be a change to the draft greenhouse gas emissions. Right now it just says reduce greenhouse gas emissions as the draft goal, but it will be more specific to the goal that was specifically adopted by council. So when we bring it back to council, we'll have those numbers.
Thank you.
So I was reading when you were going through your slides that you guys have done like 120 meetings. How often has the bridge been brought up during those meetings?
I would say not, I don't know, that's hard to say. It definitely has come up when we met with the large group at the chamber and the realtors with the home builders. It hasn't really come up that much in our neighborhood meetings yet. Or our, it's hard to say. It's been over a year of outreach. I apologize. I can't.
Yeah, no, that's either. Okay. I just kind of see this as an opportunity for when you guys are writing this thing to kind of push the city council in the direction that the people want, which is a third bridge. That's why I think it'd be nice if you guys had something in there that was trying to, you know, that's why I know the people I talk to, everybody wants a third bridge.
So Jared, I'll jump in and try and help Eunice on this one just so.
Okay.
So, you know, we've as a board have had this conversation before where staff's role is really, we collect a lot of the information and things like that. But when it comes to the policy decisions, that is city council. So, you know, what Eunice is working on really is, you know, if you look at like our urban renewal plan, for example, you know, we have some really high level goals. And then, you know, as a group, you guys, for instance, put together the Portland Road Action Plan. And that was really specific as to how we were going to move ahead and actually implement those goals. So what Eunice's plan is really that high level goal piece. And then when you're talking about the transportation systems plan, the economic development strategy, all these different things. Now that's really how we're going to achieve those goals. But even with the input, I mean, she can put all the input down in the world. We still have to work sort of within the confines of council direction. So there's a little give and take there, I guess. But what Eunice is working on isn't going to preclude those specific projects. That's really going to come down to when you're working on the transportation systems plan and things like that as to how you're specifically going to achieve those. And then these are living, breathing documents. I guess that's the other thing. They get updated. So, you know, one decision by council could be a decision. And in 3 years down the road, situations can change, dynamics can shift, and staff can always bring things back. The public can always bring things back to council, and things can always be updated and changed. So there's really sort of that give and take a little bit, which is why, you know, the answer isn't as easy as, of course, we'll put it in. Because it's just not the type of document that this is exactly. I hope that helped.
I'd like to comment regarding some of the overlay zones that have been put in place over the last 25 years from what may be considered a high-level perspectives, plans, dreams, wishes. And effectively what's transpired in the Liberty and Commercial streets northeast, that corridor, that overlay zone and complete rezoning has had zero use application or development in the last 20 plus years. That is a very good example of a dream that has never come to fruition and has effectively downzoned and killed any possible development because the concept that was put into place has never been utilized, and now people that would utilize the dirt for a commercial building or some other project can't do so because it's not permitted. At what point in time do some of these obvious errors in overlay zones, where the hope and dream is for one thing, but the city of Salem does not simply have the population density to create that actual environment. At what point in time does that actually get reviewed? And Sarah just said, well, in several years, this is a living, breathing document. And my handy dandy BS meter is going off because here we have 20 plus years of a poorly thought out, poorly applied concept that has proved ineffective and not responsive to the needs of the community, and it's never been corrected or changed. It's like nobody has the intestinal fortitude to make the necessary adjustments or revisions. So where is Northeast Liberty Commercial Corridor in the comprehensive plan as it is proposed in this document?
So that north downtown area that you're referring to and along the riverfront, we are looking at that. And Urban Development did a whole project to look at the code and the barriers in the code. And so we have that information. Outreach was done, a consultant was hired, and we plan to incorporate that into the R. Salem project. So when we get to the zoning, which is, again, after this high-level comp plan map, later next year, we will be looking at cleaning that up. In addition to, we are examining all of the overlays in the city because we have received previous council direction to look at them. And so that's happening as part of this project.
Okay. The other comment that I have has to do with Portland Road. Mm-hmm. Portland Road is one of the few areas in the city that has some capacity for industrial and larger commercial use and application because of its structure as well as its infrastructure and its access to I-5. One of the concerns that I have is that we already have a shortage of IG and IC ground in the city of Salem that is not sufficient to support the community in its current needs. If you take that north corridor of Portland Road and rezone it to mixed use, you will effectively eliminate the possibility of further industrial development. The reason why this is a concern to me is the fact that industrial and commercial development pays somewhere in the vicinity of about 150% more in property taxes than they use in services. And residential areas use about 150% more in services than they pay in property taxes. So that the industrial development actually provides for the residential areas to have lower property taxes. And it's always been that way. And it's not a question. The community that has the most residential services in the U.S. is the city of industry in California. So the concern that I have as far as the comprehensive plan is removing industrial property is really going to hamstring the community.
So I think I maybe should have clarified, Nate. I appreciate that. We did work and talk a lot with urban development in particular, and specifically with Sarah along Portland Road, and we are not proposing to change the zoning of the industrial properties along Portland Road. We're looking at the commercial properties on the other side and opening up the opportunities to do more there. We're not proposing to take and change those industrial areas.
I understand that the small neighborhood service concept, like you would find in the European model, is just a wonderful thing. So people can, the soccer moms with the bicycles can take their three kids across town to their music lessons and pick up a quart of milk 19 times a day for a family that goes through 11 gallons of milk a week. And consequently, businesses like Walmart and Costco are going to fail because everybody's going to move away from volume purchasing of goods and services to being able to purchase a quart of milk at their neighborhood store for 30% more. And I absolutely, sorry, I'm there. But the concern that I have, and I was on the Planning Commission for two full terms, and one of the things that was put in place at the time was the ability to do a neighborhood center, and the first property that was zoned for that purpose was in West Salem because of the distance from other services. So as part of a transportation plan, as far as the ability to develop and provide a service core for a community or a neighborhood, that was put in place at the time. I will encourage you to consider that neighborhood development across the community is not as beneficial as good access and egress, and will encourage a much more realistic approach to transportation and allowing for the movement of goods and services and vehicles through the community than the little neighborhood store. Anyway, that's all I've got. Thank you.
So I have a question, kind of a follow-up on that, Enos. So if you guys change the zoning to mixed use, does that mean it can't be industrial? I mean, I'm just asking because I don't know.
We are changing the industrial areas. So are you referring to the commercial areas?
Right, that's what I mean. So if you're taking the commercial area and making it mixed use, does it still have the opportunity to just be industrial right away without any, you know, changing of zoning?
So the goal of those areas where it's commercial right now is to essentially just add housing to the mix as an opportunity. So we're trying to broaden and create more flexibility, not take away in those areas. It should be easier. Yes.
It's easier for someone to do housing than it is for them to do industrial.
We're not changing the industrial area. So in a commercial retail area, if you're allowed to do a small amount of manufacturing, for example, that remains. We're not taking that away. We are trying to make it easier to do additional uses, including housing. Does that make sense? We're not taking away any uses that are currently allowed.
I've got a question. With COVID-19, all our behaviors are changing. We're not driving to the local grocery store anymore. or riding our bicycles to the store. We're just getting online and having our groceries delivered. So the way that our society obtains necessary products or services has got a drastic change in the last 9 months. Is that on your radar? Is that in your crystal ball? Are you guys thinking of that in the future? Or are we still planning on the traditional way of doing things? Because I'm concerned that if we do things the same way, we're going to be behind the eight ball, so to speak.
Yeah, we realize that we can't predict the future regardless of the pandemic, right? We can't look out 20 years and know exactly what's going to happen and how things will change and shift. And so that's why we are trying to build in flexibility in how properties can be used and what can be done to a large extent. So I would agree with you that obviously behaviors have changed. More people are working from home, right? They're not driving as much, for example. Some people are walking more, right? Because they are trying to get out. But will that stay the same? I mean, it's hard for me to say. And so we're just trying to create, like, what are the range of possibilities and instead of locking everything down and saying, you can only use your property for retail, you can only use your property for office, you can only use it for housing. To some extent, we have to meet our projections for housing, employment, industrial growth, et cetera. So there are projections that we have to meet to have this acknowledged by the state. But beyond that, we can create the flexibility. So that's kind of where we're headed right now. If you have big concerns, for example, of a specific use and that not being allowed in a certain area, that's the type of feedback I would love to hear. And then we can look at the map and say, should this area or this property be something else? Or, you know, or is it too restrictive or should it, you know, but that's the feedback I'm looking for now.
Eunice? Maybe it's worth taking a step back and just clarifying for the group. So we're essentially talking about expanding the possibilities on the east side of Portland Road, not precluding, you know, if you had a large retailer who wanted to come in and build a 120,000 square foot and the property was big enough, we're not precluding that or like imposing any kind of, because I think we're looking back at what the Rose Garden property overlay, it's where the affordable housing apartments are now. That was something where I think it did preclude that development and development of that of some kind. There was a mixed use overlay on it, I think, that had, it was before I came on the board, but there was a lot of talk of essentially it sort of hamstrung potential development, and that's not what's happening here, right? You're just adding options. And then the west side of Portland Road that's already industrial isn't changing. So
exactly.
Not taking industrial land off the map at all. It's what it sounds like to me. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Does anyone else have any questions or comments?
Just thanks for, this is an exhaustive amount of work and it looks like you've given flexibility and incorporated what I've heard when, I didn't get a chance to participate in these meetings as I would have liked, but I appreciate the neighborhood sensitivity while also, understanding that, to Nate's point, this is not a small European city-state and will not be anytime soon, but I think it's important to preserve flexibility for people who might be willing to take some risks, so thanks.
Eunice, can you repeat kind of the timeline again for me of when this is supposed to go in front of the city council?
So we're hoping to bring it back, I think, by February to the council and ask for acceptance. Again, it's just asking them, like, should we proceed with this general vision? And then we will be working on policy specific. So we'll have weekly policy meetings. That's the intent right now. So we'll have a meeting in the spring, for example, on transportation, one on parks, one on housing. That will be in the spring. And then we'll work on all the details of the zoning code, and hopefully bring it all back together as a package by the end of next year. So there will be public hearings and there'll be a lot of outreach. But right now we're shooting for the next milestone really being bringing this back to council, hopefully by February. And I'm happy to put my name and number in the chat if that makes it easier. If you have specific questions and any of you just want to call me or email me, because I know this, you have other things on your agenda, but I'm happy to talk more in detail about some of those details.
Well, and so everyone knows, while we were talking, I was looking at the website where you guys have this all set up, and it's got a really easy thing to sign up to get email updates about this project to stay up to date. So that's really cool.
And anyone can reach out to me as well if you have any questions or whatnot, and I can either, you know, get clarification from Eunice or put you in contact with her as well. She's been really great about checking in. We've had a lot of really good meetings to talk about the area and the conversations that you guys have been having. Just so that, you know, she's in the loop in terms of what, you know, what the goals and objectives of this group are as well. So just feel free to use me as a resource as well.
Well, thank you, Eunice. We appreciate the update, and I'm sure we'll be hearing from you soon.
Yeah, I'm happy to come back as the details get more fleshed out if there's, you know, when we get to the specifics as well.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sarah, any other updates for anyone?
So I just had one update, and we kind of started on it before the meeting had started. You'd asked me about the grand opening of the new cheese factory quesadilla on Portland Road. They are working on an official name for their restaurant portion, so I don't have that, but everyone knows exactly what project I'm talking about, which is nice. They are open. It is a really cool space. I totally recommend everyone checking it out. I did learn a really fun fact earlier this week that I just thought everybody would be really interested in hearing about. So they've been hiring staff. I mean, they brought up their staff from Albany, from their cheese makers, but now that they have this new retail and quesadilla making component, they're needing additional staff. And it sounds like a lot of the staff that they have been hiring have actually been they're all residents of the affordable housing project just behind the facility. So it's just, you know, a really cool, like, circular kind of project where, you know, we've been able to help on the infrastructure to put in the affordable housing project. We were able to help on this project, and now they're actually able to hire some of the folks that are living right there that can just walk to work. So I just thought that was really neat, and I wanted to share it with everybody.
That's great.
And then Jerry had an update for Jason.
Oh, yeah. In case we don't have a December meeting, this is Jason's last meeting, unless we meet in December. 6 years, Jason. Thank you so much. It's pretty awesome. I'm going to switch so I can see you. There you are. Thank you so much. I know when I came on, you were the chair of this board, and that was right when you guys were starting the Portland Road, the whole Portland Road project that you had all been working on. And I drive on Portland Road every day. It was done beautifully. I mean, it's great. So thank you so much for your 6 years, man.
Hey, appreciate that. This has been a neat dynamic group to be part of and to chair for a while. And it's been a learning experience for me for sure as well. So I think I got at least as much out of it as I might have brought to the table. So just appreciate that. The staff's been great. Jared, you're rocking it, so.
Yeah, thank you. where are you going next? Are you going to join another board?
I haven't decided. I have not applied for anything yet, sort of taken a step back. I have a almost 2-year-old and, you know, a job, like, and so just sort of trying to think about what might make the most sense. I can reapply here again in a year, I think.
In 1 year you can reapply, so I'll be sure to let you know what we have available.
Sounds good.
Now I might stalk you just a little bit.
This is a great group. And like I said, learned a ton from you know, folks like Pedro and Nate and Barb and all kinds of, you know, and Jared, you know, people who bring a lot of different experiences to the table. And I think that's what's kind of neat about this, the way that this group is composed, that you know, you don't get a lot of opportunities to bring people who maybe see an issue a little bit differently to the table. I think we've seen at the national picture that we're certainly not coming together. And at the local level, it's good to see people collaborating towards, you know, we all have to live here and we all want to live here. And, you know, to see people coming together and talking to find mutually agreeable ends. So just appreciate the good faith that everyone brings to the table. And yeah, I think I'll kind of leave it at that, but appreciate it.
Thanks for your service, Jason.
Jason, thank you.
All right, well, great meeting, great updates. And as of right now, we don't really see anything for December. So
as of now, yeah, we don't. So Jared and I will talk if something comes up. And obviously, you know, we always throw it out to the board. If there's something that you want to make sure we're bringing to the table, please always let us know. We will be starting up on budget after the first of the year, per usual. Some of you may not be aware, and I will just give you a heads up since we're all on here. Our financial manager, who most of you are familiar with, Renee Frazier, is no longer with the city. She has taken the position as the chief financial officer with Business Oregon. She left about a month ago. So we have some fill-in folks right now from the city that are helping out, and they're going to be recruiting for that position. So you will see a new face when we start that budget process. I'm not sure who it's going to be yet, but just so that you're all aware, you will see a new face as we go through the process. But the process will remain the same as what you're used to.
Excellent. Any other comments? Anything? Okay, well, if we don't see you in December, guys, we'll see you next year, 2021.
Happy Thanksgiving and Christmas if we don't get the chance to connect again.
For sure. Thanks again, Jason. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Jared.
And adjourned.
All right.
See you guys around.
Bye.
Stay safe.
Thanks, guys.